I have to be honest with you. I usually feel pretty confident about my digital hygiene. You know, I use a password manager. I don't click on links from Nigerian princes. And I generally assume everyone on the internet is trying to scam me.
Right. A healthy dose of skepticism.
But after reading through the stack of reports on vishing, targeting Okta accounts, I'm legitimately rattled. I think I would have fallen for this.
It's a humbling read, isn't it? We tend to think of hacking as this high-tech wizardry with lines of green code.
Yeah.
But this,
yeah,
this is just someone being helpful on the phone.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so incredibly effective.
That's the hook right there. We are looking at a specific type of attack today that is tearing through the corporate world. It's not just vishing voice phishing. It's this coordinated real-time siege on single sign-on systems, specifically Okta.
Yeah.
And the source material we have here, including some really detailed breakdowns of modern attack vectors, paints a picture of a heist that happens while you're politely nodding along on a phone call.
And we're not talking about small-time scammers asking for Apple gift cards here. These are sophisticated operations targeting the master key to a company's entire data infrastructure.
Let's start with the evolution of this, because I think a lot of us are still stuck in the mindset of phishing 1.0, you know, the static email.
Like the spray and pray method. That was the old game. You build a fake website, you send out a million emails, and you hope, what, a tiny percentage of people click the link.
It's passive.
It's passive. It's a numbers game. But what we're seeing now is a shift to active attacks.
And that's where the vishing comes in. But reading through the report, what struck me was how industrialized this has become. The term phishing as a service kept popping up.
I know.
It sounds like a legitimate Silicon Valley startup model, which is deeply disturbing.
It is disturbing, but it's accurate. In the cyber criminal underworld, this is a business. You don't need to be a coding genius anywhere to pull this off. You can literally rent the infrastructure. We're talking about phishing kits that come with customer support, dashboards, real-time analytics.
So just to be clear, a criminal can basically pay a monthly subscription fee to get a command and control panel.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And this panel is what changes everything. In the old days, if I sent you a link to a fake website, that website was static. It just sat there.
Right.
But with these new kits, the attacker has a console open. When you click the link, they can see exactly what you're doing in real time. They can change what the website shows you based on what you say on the phone.
That is the part that freaked me out. It's dynamic. So let's walk through the anatomy of the attack described in the sources. Because they don't just start dialing random numbers from a phone book.
No, no, that would be inefficient. Phase one is reconnaissance. And this is where they leverage the sheer amount of data we all put online.
They're doing their homework.
Thoroughly. Let's say they want to target Acme Corp. They aren't going to call the front desk. They go to LinkedIn. They scrape the employee list. They look for specific roles. Maybe a senior VP of finance or someone in IT operations. Someone with privileges.
I was looking at how they verify the tech stack, too. The report mentioned they check MX records, basically looking at the email headers, to confirm the company uses Okta or Microsoft 365.
Exactly.
So before they even pick up the phone, they know who you are, what your job title is, and what software you use to log in every single morning.
And perhaps most critically, they find out who your actual IT support provider is. If you have an internal help desk, they find those names. If you use an external MSP, they find that company's name.
Why? To spoof the caller ID.
That's it. When your phone rings at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, they don't want you to see unknown number. They want you to see Acme IT support or the actual local area code of your headquarters.
Ah, so your brain immediately categorizes the call as safe and internal.
Precisely.
So I pick up the phone. The caller says, hey, this is Steve from IT. We're rolling out those new security pass keys, and I see your account is out of sync. I need to help you fix it before you get locked out.
And notice the urgency. Before you get locked out, they create a problem that only they can solve. It's a classic social engineering pretext. They might even use current events, like a recent widely publicized hack, as the excuse for the security update.
So I'm on the phone with Steve. He tells me to go to a website, but he doesn't tell me to go to the real Okta login.
No, but he sends you somewhere that looks incredibly convincing. They register domains that look almost identical. If your company is Acme, they might use acme-internal-support.com or okta-acme-verify.com.
Visually, I assume it's a clone.
A pixel-perfect replica of your company's login page. Same logo, same background image. You wouldn't know the difference.
Okay, so I'm on the fake site. Steve is on the line, probably apologizing for the inconvenience. I type in my username and password. Now, normally, this is where we think, okay, they stole my password, but with these Okta attacks, That's just the beginning.
This is where the real-time aspect kicks in. As you type your credentials into the fake site, the attacker sees them appear on their command and control panel instantly.
And they aren't just saving them for later.
No. They are acting as a relay. This is what we call an adversary-in-the-middle attack.
Okay.
Imagine a translator standing between you and the bank. You speak English. The bank speaks French. You say, "Here's my password," to the translator. The translator turns around and says, "Here's the password to the bank." The bank thinks it's talking to you.
But it's talking to the translator.
Exactly.
So the attacker takes my password and types it into the real Okta login page at the exact same moment.
Precisely.
But wait, and this is the big question everyone asks. We all have multi-factor authentication, MFA. I have an app on my phone. If I try to log in or if they try to log in, I get a buzz. Or I have to match a number. Doesn't that stop them?
You would hope so. Mm. And for years, we told people MFA is the silver bullet. But this specific phishing strategy is designed to break standard MFA.
I mean, if I have to match a number, say 45, how do they fake that?
Think about the setup. The attacker enters your password into the real Okta site. The real Okta site then sends a challenge. It displays the number 45 on the attacker's screen.
Because they are the ones requesting access.
Correct. Now, you are on the phone with them. The attacker says, "Okay, I've initiated the sync. You should see a prompt on your phone. To verify it's you, please select the number 45.
Oh, that is insidious.
Or, if their phishing kit is really high-end, they can update the fake web page you were looking at to display 45 in real time. So you see 45 on your computer screen, you see 45 on your phone app.
You click yes. And I think I'm verifying the sync with IT, but I'm actually authorizing their device to log in.
You have just handed them the keys and opened the door. The adversary in the middle has successfully authenticated.
That completely creates a short circuit in the something you have logic of MFA.
Yeah.
Because they are manipulating me, the human, to use the something I have against myself.
The human is the patchable vulnerability. You can update software, but it's really hard to update human nature. We want to be helpful, and we trust authority.
So once they are in, why Okta? I mean, I know it's a login portal, but what does that access actually give them?
Okta is the gateway. We use single sign-on, or SSO, because it's convenient. You log in once, and you get a dashboard with icons for everything. Slack, Zoom, Google Workspace, AWS, Dropbox.
It's the menu of the entire company.
It is the menu. And because you've already authenticated via Okta, the attacker can usually click into any of those apps without logging in again. They can read the CEO's email. They can download files from Dropbox. They can join the company Slack and pretend to be you.
Wow. And the report specifically highlighted one application that these attackers seem to sprint toward the moment they get in, Salesforce.
Yes. And that's a very specific, calculated move.
I always think of Salesforce as just a contact list for salespeople. Why is that the priority target?
For many modern organizations, especially in the targeted sectors like fintech and wealth management, Salesforce is the brain of the company. It's not just names and phone numbers.
What's in there?
It holds contract values, bank account details for clients, proprietary business intelligence, communication logs.
It's the money.
It is the money. And practically speaking, Salesforce makes it very easy to export data if you have the right permissions. So if you're a criminal on a timeline, knowing you might only have access for an hour before someone notices, you want the database that lets you steal the most value in the fewest clicks.
Speaking of the timeline, the report mentions that data exfiltration downloading the stolen info often starts within minutes of the breach.
It has to, because the attacker knows the clock is ticking. They are often still on the phone with the victim while they are starting the download.
That is bold. So I'm sitting there, Steve is telling me, okay, almost done, just waiting for the progress bar to finish. And meanwhile, he's looting the company archives.
And once they have the data, the game changes again. They don't just sell it on the dark web. We are seeing a massive pivot toward direct extortion. Yes. Companies start receiving emails, sometimes signed by groups like Shiny Hunters, though attribution is always tricky in these things, demanding massive payments. Or else.
Well, else they publish the data.
Exactly. They threaten to leak client data, financial records, embarrassing internal chats. It's a reputational nuke.
Mm.
And because they used valid credentials, your credentials, they bypassed all the alarms that usually go off when malware tries to break in.
Okay, I'm sufficiently terrified. Let's pivot to the how do we stop this section, because clearly my current setup isn't cutting it. If they can talk me out of my MFA code, what's left?
We have to move to phishing-resistant MFA, And I know phishing resistant sounds like a marketing buzzword, but it refers to a very specific technological difference. We're talking about FIDO2 security keys or passkeys.
I've heard of FIDO2 keys, like those YubiKeys you plug into the USB port, but I need you to explain why that works when my authenticator app fails. If Steve is on the phone, why can't he trick me into using the USB key?
This is the crucial part. It comes down to something called domain binding.
Domain binding. Break that down for me.
Okay. When you plug that key in or use a passkey on your phone, the device itself performs a check. It looks at the website you were on. If you were on okta-acme-verify.com, the fake site.
Right.
But the key was registered to acme.okta.com, the real site. The key simply refuses to work. It won't send the signal.
So the key is smarter than I am.
In this context, yes. You might be fooled by the logo and the font. You might be fooled by the smooth talker on the phone. But the hardware key is looking at the underlying cryptographic signature of the domain. If the domains don't match, the handshake fails.
So you literally cannot give the attacker access, even if you wanted to.
Exactly.
That is a game changer, because in the previous scenario, I'm the weak link. With FIDO2, the technology saves me from my own gullibility.
It takes the human element out of the authentication loop. You can't tell someone a passkey over the phone. There's no code to read out.
But we can't just rely on hardware, right? I mean, deployment takes time. What about the human side?
This brings us to the behavioral changes. And this is where the data from Technigian, the managed IT services firm mentioned in the report, is really insightful. They focus heavily on the human firewall.
I liked their take on simulations, because usually security training just means watching a boring video once a year.
And Technigian's data suggests that's just not enough. They actually conduct live phishing simulations. They hire actors to call employees and try to trick them.
That sounds intense. Imagine getting a call, falling for it, and then finding out it was a drill.
It's uncomfortable, but it's effective. You need that visceral experience. You need to feel the pressure of a live person pushing you so that when it happens for real, your muscle memory kicks in and you say, wait a minute, this feels wrong.
It's like a fire drill. You don't learn to exit a burning building by reading a PDF. You have to actually walk the route.
Exactly. And the other big behavioral rule they push is simple. Verify.
Which means hanging up.
Hang up. If IT support calls you and asks for anything related to access, hang up. Go to your company directory, find the internal number for the help desk, and call them back.
I always worry that makes me look rude or paranoid.
Be rude. In 2024 and beyond, paranoia is a survival skill. A legitimate IT person will never be offended that you are taking security seriously. In fact, they'll probably thank you.
And frankly, looking at the report, legitimate IT rarely calls you out of the blue to ask you to log into something. They usually have back-end tools to fix things.
That's a key indicator. If you have to do the work to fix the problem, it's probably a scam.
There's one more layer of defense mentioned, zero trust.
Right. Zero trust is a security philosophy. Basically, it means never trust, always verify.
Uh-huh.
Just because someone is inside the castle doesn't mean they should have keys to every room.
So even if they hack my Okta, they shouldn't be able to download the entire Salesforce database without a second check.
Exactly. That might mean triggering a reauthentication prompt for sensitive actions. Oh, you want to export 10,000 client records? Please tap your FIDO key again.
And since the hacker doesn't have the key,
they get a brick wall.
It really seems like we are in an arms race. The bad guys get better tools, so we build better locks, so they build better battering rams.
It is an arms race.
Aww.
And right now, the attackers have found a very effective battering ram in vishing. They're bypassing the firewall by hacking the human.
Before we wrap up, I want to throw one final, slightly terrifying thought at you. We've been talking about humans tricking humans, but we are also watching the rise of generative AI.
I think I know where you're going with this. Voice cloning.
Exactly. Right now, these vishing attacks rely on a stranger-sounding professional. But what happens when the caller sounds exactly like my boss, or the CEO, or my spouse?
It's already starting to happen in isolated cases. When you combine the phishing as a service kits with AI voice synthesis, the era of trusting a voice on the phone might be coming to an end.
It's a chilling thought. We might be moving toward a world where the future of security is silent. No verbal authorizations, ever.
I think that's very likely. If audio can be faked, audio can't be proof. At the end of the day, it just can't.
Well, on that cheerful note, seriously though, this has been an eye-opener. The takeaway for me is clear. Get a hardware key, verify every call, and maybe don't be so polite to strangers asking for passwords.
I just said it better. Verify, verify, verify.
Big thanks to the insights from the report and the data from Techmigian for fueling this deep dive. Stay safe out there, everyone. We'll see you on the next one.